Well, good evening and good morning, EPL State of Mind listeners. Welcome back to the final game of the season with all to play for. Will Manchester City win their fourth in a row, or will they stumble and allow the Gunners to win their first Premier League title in 20 years? I severely hope so. The relegation race may be resolved, but the final spots in Europe are still up for grabs, and it is tight. We've got some exciting updates this week beyond the conclusion of the Premier League season, as we start off with the hot news that Olivier Giroud has announced he will leave AC Milan and move to LAFC alongside former Spurs goalie and compatriot Hugo Lloris. Giroud's legacy in the Premier League is undeniable, with stints at Arsenal and Chelsea, where he left an undeniable mark. But did you know that he holds the French national team's international goal scoring record with 57 goals in 131 appearances? A lot of people don't think so. Great looking Frenchman, does it all. He's easily one of the most underrated Premier League strikers to date as well, scoring 105 goals at Arsenal, seventh highest in the club history, with the likes of Dennis Bergkamp, Thierry Henry, and many more to compete against. Before his move across town to Chelsea, where he won the Champions League, and also was a starter in the World Cup winning 2018 France squad. Impressive.
It's very impressive. And, you know, you barely touched upon it, but that man is handsome. There is no denying it. It's Olivier Giroud. Come on. But indeed, James, indubitably. Speaking of records, by the way, Man U is in danger of their lowest Premier League finish. That would be a stunning record for Ian. No, he would like that one. And they've opted out of holding their traditional awards dinner to focus solely on the upcoming FA Cup final against Man City. I mean, that's what you got to do, you know? You can't feed the players. You got to starve them. No dinner? Absolutely not. Get your shit together. James, you guys think they're going to redeem themselves in these last three matches? What do you think?
I don't know, but I do know that we're going to dive deeper into all these topics and much, much more, as we always do, and we unravel the highs and the lows of the Premier League. So stay tuned for this insightful discussion and passionate football banter in this EPL State of Mind episode as we're ready to kick it off. Impressive stuff. We've had midweek fixtures already with today, which we'll talk about. But some of the greatest hot news that we see is the growth and development of the MLS. Not only are they testing rules and allowing referees to announce their VAR rulings on pitch to get a secondary kind of opinion on how this should be implemented to Premier League moving forward, but we gained another star today. So a lot of these, kind of not washed up, but on their last legs, players are making their way over to the Premier League. We saw, as we mentioned before, Hugo Lloris came over the year before that. We had Lionel Messi. This summer, we had Luis Suarez. We're getting a lot of stars, and they're going to a lot of the big teams. And Olivier Giroud is just another coming in to bless us with such talent. You know, we mentioned before, he spent 6 years from 2012 to 2018 with Arsenal, which he played 253 games, 105 goals, extremely impressive. Then he was sold for roughly 17 million euros to London rivals Chelsea in the winter window to make room for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. We all know how that went. He came to be one of the most prolific scorers for Arsenal as well, until his not-so-graceful fall towards the end. To me, you know, if I'm talking and having the conversation with Tom Speciano and Jack Dugan, for me, one of the greatest strikers in the entirety of the Premier League, Olivier Giroud and Robin Van Persie. Sean, I know Luis Suarez is clearly numero uno for many, but how can you discredit Giroud's impact to the striker position on an international and domestic level? It's just really impressive. I think we'll probably see the downfall of his French record, because there is one guy by the name, I think it's Mbappe, this guy. he's
ever heard of him?
Ever heard of him? He's hot on his coattails already for international. Mbappe, that is, currently sitting with 46 goals in 77 matches, which is almost half of as long as it took Olivier Giroud to make it in 131 appearances with 57 goals. But nonetheless, it'll be really exciting to see Giroud's aerial ability and scoring prowess here in the States. Moving right along, unless Sean, anything to talk about Giroud besides his dash and good looks? If you go to any barber pole, their like silhouette of like a guy with really nicely coiffed hair and a trimmed beard is, I swear to God, they probably just took the silhouette of Olivier Giroud. It's impossible.
Great head of hair. Spends a lot. He's got to be spending $80 a haircut. Easy.
Yeah. It's wild, too. He left Chelsea after a relatively successful stint winning the Champions League and went to AC Milan, where they won the league his first year. So this guy had a trophy, his final farewell tour with Chelsea and AC Milan, lined them up perfectly for the MLS. But Kyle, why don't you talk us about someone or some people who are not as brilliantly looking as Giroud or has had the success as Giroud, and take us to the bottom of the Premier League table?
Yeah, so maybe not the success currently, but someone who has eclipsed his success, in my opinion, and might even be better looking. We'll touch upon Vincent Kompany.
Huh?
Yeah, it's, I mean, stunning. Absolutely.
The dude doesn't have a single piece of hair below his above his nose. I think he's got a little goatee or a little stuff, or he's completely bald.
Yeah, it's just a different look. You know, that's the Kompany style, the Kompany way. And that's how you win titles. But this year was not his year. He's heading the fuck back. All right. yeah, it was very upsetting for Burnley. Tottenham took him down this weekend. Poor one, Van der Ven. They just destroyed him. Simple as that. But I personally think, and this is not so much biased from Kompany as much as lifting Burnley up, that they'll be back next year. Not next year, but in 2 years. I mean, the absolute domination that they laid down in the Champions League, or the championship, I guess, last season to get to the Premier League was almost historical. Like, they destroyed that league. And yeah, there's a humongous difference between the Premier League and the league below it. But it would be very, very, very strange not to see them back in 2 years, in my opinion. But along the lines with Burnley, we had another team that will not be playing Premier League football this year, and that is Luton Town. Next year, I should say. They lost to West Ham 3-1. The Hatters scored early against West Ham, and it looked like they might stay up. But then Ward-Prowse, Kufal, and the 19-year-old George Earthy, they all scored in the second half. So Luton not looking so good, barring a 12-goal differential swing on the final day. Think we could have all seen that coming. I'm a little more surprised for Burnley than Luton Town from my beginning of the year predictions. But, you know, you look at the way they play, it's not the caliber football that you can stay in the Premier League with. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, we mentioned it last episode. It was tough for Burnley, too. They lost a lot of their loanee players, so we don't have to get into that. But it becomes very difficult when you have a completely different squad. Luton Town, I think we're going to all miss the Hatters quite significantly. It was a great stunt for a team who couldn't even play their first couple of home games at their stadium because it wasn't ready for the Premier League. But hopefully, hopefully it is now ready for a return next season. Now, something that is not returning to this month for Manchester United is their traditional awards dinner. Now, I would like to say that we all probably think this is because exactly what we mentioned before, their historically poor year and the records they're near breaking, about to break, or just missed breaking. And for you who really love to put on the hate or the pound of pressure onto Manchester United, why don't we go ahead and we'll just rattle them off again real quick. Not to, you know, twist the knife into anyone's in particular side, but just to entertain the remainder of the viewers.
No one in particular.
Nope, no one. So 4 points away. So this is Manchester United. So they're 4 points away from having their worst EPL point total ever with 58. They're in the worst position right now ever to finish. So if they were to remain in any place, it would be the worst. Meaning the most recent failure was seventh place under the recently discussed David Moyes, who just left West Ham because they currently sit in eighth. They are one goal away from conceding the most goals in a single season. They would have to break 57. They currently sit at 56. They are currently tied with the least amount of wins in a single season with 16 with two games left. So if they win one more, you do the math. There's a record break right there. And they do now hold the most losses in a single season, 14, with two games left. So, I'm sorry, the one before was currently tied with the least amount of wins. This one is how much they have lost, and they currently hold that record with 14. So it's not great, but as Kyle mentioned before, it's actually not because of all this horrible performances, supposedly. The hierarchy of Manchester United wants everyone on that team to be fit and mentally prepared for the FA Cup final against Manchester City. So they want no distractions and no accolades until afterwards. Now, if it's rescheduled, sure, I'm sure we'll find out that Garnacho probably wins almost every single award for Manchester United this season. If not, no big deal. I think they got maybe, you know, a couple really good stunners in there. One fact that we didn't note here, but I saw the other day that was actually kind of insane. I think there's been, what, 8 or 7 goals of the month for the season so far, technically. Manchester United has won 4 of them, which is just half or slightly above half. So, you know, a little plus side if you're Manchester United. You'll probably win the goal of the season as well with Garnacho's bicycle kick. But I thought that was a crazy weird stat that a team that has not scored as much as they have, but to actually have the goals of the months, the most goals of the months, is pretty impressive to me. It means when you do score, you're scoring bangers. But that doesn't really win you anything besides exactly that.
I would say that the counterpoint to that is they are reliant on individual pieces of brilliance because they don't create enough chances through their general like player strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a perfect example was this weekend against Arsenal. We'll talk about that later on. But moving on to the hot news, we also have gaffer extraordinaire Sean on the mic for this one. And it's a familiar face. Jesse March comes back into the picture. What's he doing this time?
He's dipping his toe into international waters. He's taken over the job of the Canada national team leading up to this summer's Copa America, which will be hosted in the U.S. I will be at a game in Atlanta for an Argentina game, so that's going to be sick. We'll definitely have a podcast on that later on, but he's certainly an interesting cat. We saw him most recently at Leeds United the year that they got relegated, unfortunately. He kept them up the first year, and then the second year he was part of the management group that got them relegated. Was previously at Salzburg and Red Bull New York, but I think it's just worth noting because he is an American that if he does well in this job, he could potentially be the favorite to take over from Greg Berhalter whenever, you know, the United States Soccer Federation figures out that he's not a good manager. We figured it out, but apparently they have not.
He even gave the Federation a golden opportunity to can his ass or not bring him back, and he still managed to come back. But baby steps, this is a good first step for him, and it will be exciting to see him play. Maybe we'll be able to catch a couple of the games here at MetLife as well, but a lot of international play for your boys over here over the summer. So a lot of exciting future features to come down the line. As far as international and hot news goes, that kind of concludes it. We had some really exciting games this weekend. Sean, why don't you take us through this roundup, and we can start with, you know, my favorite team, obviously, go to your team next, and then we'll never, ever talk about Man City again.
Hey, oh, Copernicus, nah.
It seems like a fair way to go about things. We'll start, obviously, with Arsenal's victory over Manchester United on Sunday. First time since 2007 that Arsenal do the double over Manchester United, and the third win in a row since 1998. They've also won their club record 27th Premier League game. It really has been a tremendous year for Arsenal. It just, unfortunately, it looks like it's going to come up short. Trossard did score his record best 12th Premier League goal. And I just found this interesting. If you look at the minutes, and obviously he's playing in a better team now with Arsenal than he ever did at Brighton. But he's actually played less minutes this season by almost 600 minutes than any other season in the Prem. But this is his most productive from a goal scoring standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If you look to basketball, right, American sport, they give out a sixth man of the year award to the person that's right off the bench or something like that. Trossard has gotten so good at that. He's made his way into the starting lineup for Arsenal. But for the while, we were praising this guy as the league's best super sub. And, you know, to be honest with you, he has been one of Arsenal's greatest winter or overall signings, period. You know, he's been our greatest player in terms of scoring clutch goals when it's needed in big critical games. He's got 4 massive equalizers. 2 of them came in the Champions League, one against Porto, one against Bayern. So gigantic turnout for that. He's got 3 game winners in the Premier League, which essentially gets us 9 points, right? And if you remember, he was second fiddle to selecting the possibility of bringing 100 million euros out or cashing out 100 million euros for Mikhail Mudryk against Chelsea, for Chelsea. So we brought him as a replacement to a failed transfer of Mikhail Mudryk. And I can't say enough that this has been one of the greatest secondary choices or primary choice game plan that Arsenal has been able to ring in.
Yeah, I think a lot of the success from Trossard has to be sent over to Pep Guardiola because Pep trained Arteta, who is now training Trossard. And that really is what is a central focus on his success, in my opinion. The transitive property of equality, you know?
Right, right, right. I think Sir Isaac Newton and Da Vinci and all of the great Renaissance mans would follow that logic to the T as
geniuses,
well.
Geniuses, legends of the game.
So I looked it up. Trossard has 9 goals off the bench in his career, but just interesting, number 2 in goals off the bench all time, Olivier Giroud, 21 goals. Defoe is number 1.
So there you
God damn, he's good looking. Shit. It just gets better and better.
He also was, Virgil van Dijk said, the toughest striker that he had to defend against in the Premier League. He said he always had problems with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really he's got height. He was good in aerial duels. I mean,
and he distracts you with his good looks.
That's it, dude. I would just be staring all game long.
But, you know, beyond that, what do you have on this game? Not a ton of chances for Manchester United. As you'd expect, Arsenal's defense looked pretty strong, though. I think it's 16 clean sheets now on the season, which is unbelievable how good the defense has been.
It's ridiculous. It's been quite, like you said before, and I appreciate that credit. I mean, just here, this was at Old Trafford. This was our 11th away clean sheet. Away. So when you hear clean sheets, you always hear of home, because your home is your castle, it's your fortress. But we're doing this shit away, which is so impressive. Overall, I thought it was way more of a nerve-wracking game than it needed to be. Like you said, the defense had a pretty solid lockdown. You know, Manchester United only had 0.5 expected goals. They had zero from set pieces because they didn't have any real set pieces. They didn't create any big chances. So we had a pretty good seal on defensive prowess of it. But this was one of the first games in a while that I've seen Arsenal come out and looked kind of deflated, that they didn't really take anything to Manchester United. This is a game that we probably could have won 3-0, 4-0 with the lineup that Manchester United was forced to put out again, missing Bruno, missing Rashford. McTominay came back from potentially an injury, so we didn't take advantage. Amrabat was in the center of the pitch starting for the second time since, I think, December. So it was a very ragtag team from United. It was a stressful second half for sure. I was watching it on a car ride home from Virginia with my headphones in, and I was just sighing or trying to control my breathing a bit much, because if you lose that or you tie that, it's completely over. And it's a game that I think we definitely could have dominated a little bit more. But like you said, we did get the goal from Trossard relatively early on in the game. This was, you know, another highlight from Casemiro, that he wasn't able to push up the defensive line or meet the other defenders, which kept Havertz on and eventually allowed Havertz to get another goal contribution of the season. Also having an incredible year. We've talked about that a lot, so I won't keep going. But the craziest part was that Casemiro, although he was a main contributor to this goal, he was also at the same time Man U's best player with a foot mob rating of 7.7. So if that doesn't say a lot about how Manchester United played during this game, I don't know what will. Personally, I think Garnacho was their best player. He's going to be their best player moving forward. He gave Ben White a lot of difficulty, but Ben White was able to keep him in his pocket for the most part, or keep him at bay until Saliba was able to come over and help. So overall, it was a rather stressful and frustrating game for me, but hey, all they needed to do was get a result to keep the hope alive, and they did so, and it's going to come down to the final day. So very, very, very intense game, and again, couldn't be prouder of these boys, but like you said, it's been a great season for Arsenal so far.
Yeah, I thought, man, you played really well that game, honestly. You know,
for their lineup.
They let up the one goal, which should not have been let up. But, you know, if you're a Man U fan, or if you're a player and you're, you know, you finish the game, you're like, oh, we held Arsenal to one. They're ecstatic. That's a great play. They let in shots. They let in possession, less fouls. You know, that they played their game. But to Sean's point, they had 14 shots and 0.5 XGs. Which is, you know, what Sean is saying is they're going for the spectacular. They're not building up a play. Like, you're telling me that each time they take a shot, it's 0.05, 0.04 XG. There's a 1 in 25 chance that ball goes in the net. Why are you even taking the shot? So, you know, it was a decent showing, in my opinion, from Man U to hold Arsenal to what they were held to. But they really need to work on their team aspect of it. The chemistry is just, it's, you know, you're playing FIFA with different regions, different players, different everything. The chemistry is humongous.
Yeah, that's a good point. It will be an interesting offseason for Manchester United, especially if they're not able to capitalize on any European soccer, which we'll talk about later. But one game that we kind of have that happened today that was the opposite of Arsenal, Manchester United, that only had one goal. This game had six, and it was quite a bit of back and forth, a real thriller. And this was Villa versus Liverpool. Obviously, we know that Liverpool has also had an impressive season, especially coming off of the season that they had last year. You know, they really tried to give Klopp a proper send-off. And I think it's, you know, they did their best, and they're still one of the top teams in the league. Obviously, the only other team that helped push City to the end here. But this one's really a highlight for Villa
and how their season has been going, and how close they are to the sweet nectar of victory and Champions League here. So, Sean, why don't you talk us through this succulent game?
Wow, there you go. On brand. We'd love to see that. We'll start it off with a former Arsenal boy, as you called him, a secret agent, Emi Martinez. He spilled in Harvey Elliott's cross in the first minute. He's got the most own goals in the Premier League dating back to last season with three. Nobody else has more than one. I don't know. Maybe he is a double agent, but
yeah. Well, the last season, the iconic one was against Arsenal, right? World-class Jorginho, yes. Hits
hit
off
him
the
in the back
bar,
of the head.
Back of the head. You know, he's really still kind of working for Arsenal here, other than the fact that he helped Villa do the double over us this year, which if you just take those games away, we win the league. But we'll ignore that for now.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, from there, Villa did tie it up, and they played really well in the first half. They just didn't take their chances. They were offside on a couple as well. Gakpo scored in the late stages of the first half off of, I thought Joe Gomez almost scored his first professional goal. It looked like it was, but Gakpo kind of got there and put it in. And I think it was like Martinez was going to push it wide had he not got a fingertip to it. So we'll take that. And then Jarrell Quanta scored his first ever Premier League goal off another Harvey Elliott assist. I feel like he's been another guy who's played really well in the last month or so. I think he's up to 5 assists on the season, so he's played really well. Made it 3-1, but John Durant scored 2 goals off the bench. The first one, turnover by McAllister, and he thumps this. I mean, thumps this with his left foot, which is allegedly his weaker foot. He also scored a banger earlier in the year, but he scores one that way, and the other one just complete luck. It's a through ball from Moussa Diaby, hits off his knee and goes into the top corner. 2 goals in 4 minutes and just a point away from booking a place into the Champions League. And their next, or basically, if Tottenham loses any points in the next 2 games, Villa are guaranteed to be in. So that kind of leads right into Manchester City and Kyle, the rapid kicks of the weekend.
It sure does. Gvardiol nets his 4th goal in 5 games as a left back. It leads Man City to their 7th consecutive victory. We also had some really nice play from Phil Foden this game. He scores with his right foot far and away to make it 3-0 at the time. Or I'm sorry, 2-0 at the time. So that was really the burying goal. And then Gvardiol had another wonderful finish about 3 minutes later. And then we even had our boy net the penalty right at the end. Oh my God.
Alvarez.
Thank you so much. Unbelievable. But yeah, I mean,
can I ask you guys
really good?
Let me ask you guys a question real quick. Sorry, Kyle. So Vardiol had a brace already. He was still in the game. Alvarez, yes, he's the striker, but Haaland, who's your penalty kicker, is technically off the pitch. So it goes to your secondary penalty kicker, who is Alvarez. But would you guys allow Vardiol to take that to become the first English Premier League defender with a hat trick in the history of the PL?
I would have loved it. I think it was, I don't know. I think Alvarez just needed the goal, man. But yeah, they should have let him have it.
There's still a chance, though, that City needs goal difference to win the league. Like, if they drew Tottenham, but then they beat the shit out of West Ham and Arsenal only won, like, 1-0, they could win the league that way, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So you locked in the golden goal, the true lock.
Yeah, so you go for the best penalty taker on the pitch. But I do get what you're saying. I think if that didn't matter, then yeah, you definitely give him a shot. But I just don't think Pep operates that way, especially because there's a chance that goal does really matter.
Yeah, 100%. Also, if you guys watched Haaland play that game, he was garbage. He missed some really, really good opportunities. We're talking like 0.4 XG on the shot alone, and he's missing it 5 feet over the crossbar. So there were some chances that he just blew. So it was not his game. I'm glad they subbed him off when they did. But all in all, dominating performance from City. There was never a moment in the game that they looked worried. After Foden netted the second, it was really over, but it was kind of over after the first. But yeah, I mean, they got 2 games left this week. It's going to be a very, very trying week for the players, but this is how champions are made. So we're gonna roll through it and see how this happens. Sunday is going to be fucking electric. Yeah,
it's going to be something else. But talking about sharing penalty kicks, sharing goal contributions, sharing it. Tell us about Crystal Palace and their top 3 sharing one of the best performances of the season for them.
Yeah, it was a line hat trick. The front line of Crystal Palace of Elise, Mateta, and Eze all score a goal. I think the guy you got to give a got to give a shout out to in this game is Elise. He reaches double digits for the first time in his career. Nice curler comes in. You knew as soon as he got the ball on the right hand side, right along the penalty box, he was going to cut in onto that left and curl one in, and he does so. Then he also set up Eze for the game clinching goal. To me, he's right up there among the best right wingers this season. I mean, guys that have played there, Saka, Salah, Bowen, even Foden's played there for minutes, Cole Palmer. But, I mean, Elise is certainly right up there. He's been sensational since Glasner took over and, you know, continues his hot form to end the season. And Crystal Palace in 12th place. It really is going to happen. It's unbelievable.
It's nuts. And we said it last week. I'm pretty sure we said the week before, and we said the week before. Healthy Eze and Elise are nearly impossible to not, you know, give a shout out to. I mean, they unfortunately, I think Crystal Palace is going to cash in on one of them this offseason. I believe they both technically have 2 years left in their contract, Eze and Elise. So they could technically maybe keep them both for half the season, see how it's going, and then maybe get a little bit more from them for the winter. If not, wait till the summer. You're still going to get a good bidder. But I think Manchester United right now is the front runner for reaching out for Elise. But hopefully for Crystal Palace, I'd love to see him keep those three together for one more season and see what happens. As far as threes, Chelsea put three into the back of the net this weekend against Nottingham Forest. It was 3-2. And we highlighted it, but it was the return of Reece James. He played his first game in over 5 months. And we've talked about his quality. We've highlighted that he's one of the best, but you can only be the best if you play. And unfortunately, injuries have been one of his worst attributes as a professional player, specifically with Chelsea over the course of his career. But he came back after 5 months and assisted the second of Chelsea's 2 goals in 2 minutes to take all 3 points away from Nottingham. For Nottingham, this didn't really do much because of the results at the bottom of the table for Luton Town and Burnley, but it does, you know, at least push it to one more week for a formal final acceptance that, you know, Burnley and Luton Town are done. If Nottingham Forest were to lose by 6 goals and Luton Town were to win by 6 goals, now that would be a crazy Super Sunday, but Nottingham Forest, I think even with your appeal on the fritz here, you're good to go. But keeping it in the Chelsea Blues way, one final shout out for this game is that Cole Palmer now has a 20-10 season, 20 goals, 10 assists. He's had an incredible season so far. I know that he's going to make a resurgence into probably our team of the season when we highlight that in the upcoming week episodes. But until that episode, we'll keep praising his performance for the season. With that being said, we're going to come right back because we're going to talk about Super Sunday. We're going to talk about this week, tomorrow specifically for Tottenham versus Man City and how that could you know, affect an already nail-biting Super Sunday. So we'll take a quick break here and we'll be right back with the weekend ahead. So if you guys all remember earlier, probably maybe a month ago, we talked about this individual team specifically as having a massive influence over the title contendency, right? So it was Tottenham Hotspurs. We said, oh, you know, when Man City and Arsenal played each other and it went 0-0, Liverpool, Man City, and Arsenal were all 1 point away, and that Tottenham Hotspurs was going to decide who the title would go to. Well, they shat the bed against Arsenal and they shat the bed against Liverpool. So the only impact that they will have, still technically accurate, is if they will or will not shit the bed against Manchester City. They face up tomorrow at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which Man City still have not scored a Premier League goal at since Tottenham Hotspur Stadium has been a thing. So there's still a little bit of hope there. They're coming off of the Burnley win, as we talked about before. And with the tie today with Villa versus Liverpool, there is a small glimmer of Champions League hope for Tottenham Hotspur. They obviously need this result and next week's result to win or get that fourth place and a result in the Villa game that goes unkind to Villa. But there is still hope. Kyle, is it false hope or how confident or their lack of confidence you have with this game coming tomorrow?
I mean, there's hope. There's always hope. It's the Premier League. And Spurs have been an electric second half team these last three, four games. So it's quintessential that Manchester City jumps out to a quick lead. I think if we go into the half tied, we're in big, big trouble. I mean, Pep Guardiola does, you know, play second half football. He goes in a locker room. He's one of the best coaches I've ever seen at depicting the first half performance of the game, giving a coach talk and getting your team out there to fight what he's facing. But it appears that Tottenham is doing just the same right now. So it's going to be a big match. This is, I mean, it's Tottenham. These guys can beat any team in the world on a good day. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They have some big names, some quality players, a decent coach at this point. So, yeah, I mean, there's always nerves to be had. I do think City should win this, but who knows? It's an away game. It's in London. We all know what that bus drive does to the Manchester City players. So
here we go.
What'd you talk about? What you talking about? If you don't think I'm playing down like a $50 Tino bet on Tottenham, it's ridiculous. I mean, I am nervous as shit right now because, I mean, both of these last games, I think we still got to play West Ham. I would put Tottenham a little bit above West Ham in their current form. So this is the game that I have more nerves for. But even going up against West Ham, I mean, every time, every Championship Sunday, as James will get into this later about how epic that day is, but every time it comes down to the last game and somehow or another, Manchester City is losing. They get one point during the day. They're always losing. They always need to come back on Championship Sunday, whether it's a 90th minute goal or three goals in 10 minutes. And, you know, you got to do what you got to do to win it. But this is the most nervous time of the season for me. It's crazy. So I'm just going to go ahead and delete FanDuel or lose my entire bank account. One of the two.
Yeah, this game is definitely the harder of the two. You have Man City versus West Ham. We'll talk about later. But Sean, if you're Ange, you fight for Champions League and you're pressing hard and you keep going. You show that, hey, this team came together and did something special when no one thought we would. They pretty much rotated almost half of their entire roster between last season and this season, bringing in new guys or bringing loanees back to start up like Destiny Udogi, brought in Pedro Porro halfway through the season last year, really making a good stint on this. But if you're a Tottenham Hotspur fan, what side of the fence are you sitting on? We've, of course, seen all the Reddits and the Instagram and the TikToks of expressions or like super fans of Tottenham saying, throw the game, bring out the U14s with sliders on their feet. Where are you sitting on this one?
Yeah, if I was a fan, I'm trying to think in the perspective of Tottenham. Yeah, obviously you would rather just play a year of Europa. They probably still can take a step forward under Ange and be in a Champions League spot. They've done it consistently qualified for the most part over the last decade. So 1 year without it's not the end of the world. Arsenal winning the league and because of you is definitely like the end of the world from a Tottenham fan.
End of the world.
Yeah, but if you're a Tottenham player, I don't think anybody's thinking about that. They want to qualify for the Champions League. A lot of bonuses are tied up in that. And it's, you know, the attention, it's good for your career, all that nonsense. So I don't think they're thinking about it. But yeah, if you're a fan, obviously you don't want Arsenal to win the league. So you'd rather the team roll over and let Man City scratch their belly like West Ham will do on Sunday.
Yeah. As an Arsenal fan, I don't think I'll ever cheer as much as I will cheer for Spurs tomorrow. I will definitely be, you know, supporting the white and blue. My hometown club growing up was Ramsey Hotspurs. So I'm going to just channel that energy and bring it back for a game. Kyle, you and I played on that for many of years. So maybe you can be a Spurs fan too, Kyle. I think that would be really
I still have my old Tottenham Hotspur jersey that we used to wear. I mean, it will not fit, but I still have it.
It's good. But it's not the only game that has some really important credentials alongside of it. And the next one is Manchester United versus Newcastle United at Old Trafford on Wednesday. So, Sean, why don't you take us through that?
Absolutely. This game is massive right now. Newcastle sit in sixth place. They have a great goal differential. They're, I think, 10 ahead of Chelsea and like 26 ahead of Manchester United. But United can catch up to Manchester or to Newcastle here with a win. They are 3 points back and they have to win this game if they want to finish in a European place through the league. They could also get a spot into Europa if they win the FA Cup. But if they were not, they pretty much have to win this game. An interesting note is that Newcastle's beaten United 7-0 on their last three matches on aggregate since they lost the Carabao Cup final last year. It's the first time since 1956 that Newcastle beat Man U three times in a row.
That's wild. And this is definitely going to be a massive game for Newcastle as well. So even though it's at Old Trafford, you got to hand it to the Magpies. They're definitely going to do what they can to ensure.
It also seems like Manchester United is just getting healthy for the FA Cup final. So I don't expect any of the guys that are coming back to play in this game. I think it'll be a pretty weak squad once again for United.
Yeah, I think that's a great call. That's a great shout. Another team that kind of has Manchester United's fate in their hands via league would be Brighton and Chelsea. And they actually go against each other this week as well on the same day on Wednesday, 15 minutes before the Manchester United Newcastle kickoff. Provided that Manchester United don't win their game versus Newcastle or somehow beat Man City in the FA Cup, like John was talking about, for Chelsea, a win over Brighton would almost guarantee the Blues one of the most improbable comebacks into European contention for next season. I mean, I think halfway through the season, we completely discredited this team and called them out that there's no way they're getting European soccer. Personally, I would hope that they don't get European soccer just to see the financial burden that does bless Chelsea with. But if you are a Chelsea fan, you are crossing your toes, your fingers, your eyebrows, your lashes, your everything. I won't bring up the last thing that you can probably cross relatively easily if you had to. But you're not, you are ecstatic that you're even in this position right now, right? I mean, it's insane. And even more ecstatic is, Kyle, you want to take it with your boy Cole Palmer, who, based off of this next stat, I think will become your next favorite Chelsea player, period.
Absolutely. Cole Palmer, product of Pep, like they all are, all the great ones.
But this one's actually fucking true.
He is the first Chelsea player to get 20 goals and 10 assists in a season since Frank Lampard and Didier Drogba did it in the 09-10 season. But pause, Frank Lampard appreciation segment. Absolute legend of the Premier League. I mean, we're talking about one of the three greats. Back in the day, there was Paul Scholes, Frank Lampard, and Steven Gerrard. That was them. Paul Scholes, best passer. Steven Gerrard, best shooter. And then Frank Lampard just had that mix of both. Unbelievable player. The fact that Cole Palmer is now in the conversation with Frank Lampard, there's two things that happen because of that. One, Frank Lampard's name gets tarnished because absolutely Cole Palmer is not onto that level yet. But also, Cole Palmer's name gets elevated because now he's in a group with Frank Lampard. Didier Drogba, by the way, is a unit, an absolute beast. He's still scoring great goals. He's bald now, which is very strange to see. He looks completely weird. But still, all around, phenomenal player. But yeah, Frank Lampard, I mean, coaching extraordinaire, midfield extraordinaire. He's won leagues, Champions Leagues, absolute unit out there. Can't talk higher of Frank Lampard.
Sean, who would be a better coach at this moment, Frank Lampard or Cole Palmer?
Oh, I probably Cole Palmer. At least he knows. I mean,
well, here's the problem.
I'd rather just take. Do I get Cole Palmer to play on my team as well?
Yeah, he's a player coach.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, let him play. I'd rather that than Frank Lampard and finish like 15th.
Now, here's the problem with Frank Lampard as a coach. He's used to players of extremely high caliber, such as himself and Didier Drogba and, you know, John Terry playing on the field. So when he's a coach, he's using all these strategies as though he has his old team. And it's just, well, you know, it's not going to work. You don't have those players.
Right, yeah. Especially, like, for example, when Chelsea won the Champions League in 2021, then Frank Lampard took over later in that year.
Did they win?
Yeah.
Did they play Man City?
Against Man City.
Oh, my God. I hope no one got a tattoo of the Champions League because of that.
Dude, that's a bad beat. That's a bad beat.
That's tough. But without, you know, continuing the Frank Lampard show, we do have two other games on Super Sunday that everyone's eyes will pretty much be glued to. We obviously are going to have the Villa game with our eyes glued to that one as well if Spurs are not able to have a result on Wednesday. But the final two games for Arsenal and Man City. Arsenal is playing Everton, as we have for the past couple of seasons, last year more particularly. We play them at home. And Everton, the Toffees, you are already clear from relegation. You're safe. You actually took back your 2-point appeal from the Premier League just this week. So that's no longer even a question. You've passed with that 2-point deduction as well. Last season, they fielded a second squad, essentially, and Arsenal beat you guys, I believe it was 5-0. So I'm hoping that we do something along those lines. And then potentially West Ham, who do not look favorable whatsoever, out of the last 24, out of the last 31 games, Manchester City has won 24. There has been 4 draws, and West Ham have won only 3 times. So a lot like the stats that we shot out there for Fulham, it's not looking great for West Ham. So again, please, for the love of God, someone do something on Wednesday so I can try not to drown my entire body in the world's largest pint of Guinness on Sunday. I just don't want to do it.
I hate to be that guy, but a pint is a unit of measurement. So the smallest pint and the largest pint are still going to be the
Cook him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Man City just won. Man City just won the league. That's it. Kyle just won it for
huge
him.
For the program. Huge.
Yeah. Well, that would suck. So I think no one wants Man City to win, and Kyle has so graciously muted himself, so obviously he agrees. But along those lines, I think we have one last lock of the week, and Sean, I think it looks like you've blessed us with this.
I'm coming out of retirement. Palace over Villa, plus 105. Palace is cooking right now. Book it. Screw Aston Villa. They don't even need the points probably when City wins tomorrow. So I feel like they don't care. And Villa is going to get cooked at Selhurst Park.
Crystal Palace fan club.
I'm back. I'm fully back in. They're more enjoyable to watch than Liverpool. I was just upset that they dunked on our season, but then like we've dropped like so many points since that game doesn't even really matter in the grand scheme of things. still an Eze and Elise guy till I die. Mateta is growing on me. I can't lie. He's scoring a lot of goals. I like to watch him.
Well, welcome back to the fan club, Sean. Happy to have you.
A short-lived departure.
Hey, man. Good things come back to people who really need it. So good. Well, hopefully on that note of good things come back to people who need it and deserve it, hopefully the Premier League title can come back to Arsenal for the first time in 20 years. Manchester City, you definitely had your fair share of it. You have the opportunity to do it for the first time in Premier League history, making it a four-peat. So regardless, there is a bit of history to be made this weekend. With that being said, Sean, do you have any final thoughts on who is going to raise the trophy on Super Sunday?
Listen, man, I've implored you not to get your hopes up over the last month. You haven't listened to me. I'm telling you, if it comes down to West Ham on Sunday, if Man City wins tomorrow, don't even bother watching the game. Don't do it. Just watch the Arsenal game and enjoy it. I've been there before. It is so painful.
If Man City beats Spurs, that is exactly what I'll be doing. But I will also be doing that with – I'm going to double down on the world's largest pint. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to make a new measurement. I'm going to call it a pint with a bunch of random letters in it, but still everything is silent, so it's still a pint. And it's going to be gigantic. So I don't know. We'll see if I show up to work on Monday. Either due to pure depression or pure joy. It will be one or the other.
No, you'll make it work. This is like the old Kessler run in 12 parsecs, you know. It's a unit of measurement. It might not be. It might be. James, world's largest pint. It's yours. 100%.
Thank you. If there's anything that I will like to catch this weekend, it is definitely one of those with the trophy. But guys, it's been a hell of a season. We're not done yet, obviously.
Yep. So we have a lot of exciting things coming up. We have the team of the year. We have Championship Sunday recap. We have a who's who of the bottom of the table, and probably a draft, little Copa America preview, some Euros. So James, turn that frown upside down when Man City wins their fourth in a row, and let's keep it going.
Well, thank you, Sean. I will do my best, but for me and everyone here at the EPL State of Mind, we thank you for your continuation of support and listening of the podcast. Like he said, we're far from over. We'll see you guys next week, and many more information and many more features to come. So thank you.